Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Fart. What's up, Airheads? Back in the Airstream studio. Starting things off with a fart, Furians. I'm Trey, and that's Corey.
Hey, don't hey, do Corey. I look better this week? I'm good. Do I look better this week? Because I was getting shit on my I didn't get shit on from this particular from me looking like, you know, in kind of in the dark on putting on airs, but I was doing my wrestling podcast Sunday and I had the same light setup that I kind of thought was cool, and a lot of the wrestling fans were calling me a quote a fucking jabroni. I couldn't afford lights, clearly my career wasn't going well, and I told him, I was like, yeah, one of my lights blew out and I haven't got it fixed yet, but I put a lamp behind me, so I'd look better.
It's much better. Glad that I guess Airheads are they're sweet by nature, I guess, because
they
also
I just know
how much of a lunatic you are, so that's why I just didn't say anything. But I agree more with the wrestlers in
the thing is
not hit, but I knew you couldn't help it. But so what good was it going to do me being like, the fuck is this? This is horse shit. So I just let it ride.
It didn't hit for me either. There was just nothing I could do about it. And I was like, well, I'm just not going to mention anything and draw attention to it. But then I looked at YouTube, as I do every now and then, and literally all the comments, and we got a message from Radical Riley and Aunt Tiff from Reddit, and everybody was talking about how it looked kind of sinister and fancy and like an avant-garde film, and they thought that I was going for that. And I was like, no, light just broke, you know?
They are.
So I was like, I don't know.
Plum too sweet over there. The Airheads are. Yeah. So you're talking about Hans Christian Andersen, right?
Indeed. I wanted to last week, but we'd already done an hour 45. So yeah, this week.
Yeah, I'm thinking. I've also thought about this is more of a here's your twisted tea hitting. If y'all listen to Well Read this week, if you're in this universe, you know that Cho claimed that he almost never ever drinks anymore. But every time I or y'all see him, he's throwing back a twisted tea or something. Yeah. And talking about how
that was the first fucking time I drank on Well Read in forever. And I've said a million times, like, the only time I ever do drink is putting on airs. And I even stopped that for a long time. And you got mad at me.
Yeah, no, go for it. Yeah, it hits.
Thank you.
So we didn't get to Hans Christian Andersen last week because you insanely, I feel like, thought you could talk about the entire kingdom of Denmark and their perhaps most famous export or patriot or whatever. Yeah. What do you call a person from a place? Their most famous
export?
Yeah, but an export is like a thing. I guess a person can be a thing, but there's a word for that, goddammit, isn't it? I mean, product. Anyway, you thought you could do all that in one segment on one episode. Lunacy. Well, so
okay,
of course we have
to. Now hold on now. Hold on now. I am a lunatic, but let's not act like this is the reason why. To be fair, I only had 5 very minuscule fun facts about the Kingdom of Denmark, and I never know which Trey Crowder I'm getting on which subject. Like, sometimes you give me a whole hell of a lot. And I know, like, oh, that might happen. And then sometimes, you know, something might not strike you and you don't give me anything. So, like, we could have easily gone through those 5 fun facts very quickly, but they struck your fancy. So, like, I didn't fucking know that me and you doing 5 little fun facts about Denmark would turn into 45 minutes to an hour. So, like, you know what I'm saying? And also, Trey, I love you. Like, you're one of my best friends. You're my favorite people. When I'm looking into your eyes and discussing things, do you think it feels like an hour and a half to me? No. Time stands still. I didn't know fucking how long we'd been talking.
Well, on that note, I actually had thought about, and I guess this is what I started to say when I said this is a behind-the-scenes thing, but I'll throw it out there for everybody and see what they think. I'm starting to think that maybe you Ort lead, maybe, with your, because, you know, you really bulk up on your knowledge base there. You do a lot of cramming, you put a lot of stuff together. Like, and it's like, I feel like, you know, you can go a long time. And
that's
so
true.
If we go long on just bullshitting before we even get to you, then, you know, then we like we're really stretching it. And I know it's like an hour and a half is totally fine. Don't get me wrong. And it seems to hit for people just fine. People aren't complaining. But I've just
this show will never be shorter than an hour and a half. There's no fucking way.
See, my personal preference, and I know the king of all podcasting, Joe Rogan, proves this to be apparently not at all true. But for me, I feel like an hour and a half should be like the maximum length of a podcast.
I agree, but I don't think this show should be between an hour and an hour and a half
is where they should come in at.
Agreed.
So, but anyway, so yeah, just something to mull over, you know, if y'all want to drop some airmail about what you think about it, although it may not, perhaps it don't hit for him. We could still bullshit a little bit up top, but then whatever I've got that I'm planning to talk about, you know, maybe we put that at the end.
Look, I've often said that maybe sometimes we should switch it in and out, but there's certainly pros and cons to both, such as oftentimes when we get on your shit, we go down these nice, wonderful rabbit holes and we explore new things that we didn't know we were going to talk about. And if we only have 15 minutes, then we're going to be limiting ourselves. And also, whenever we do your shit, we never do a part one and two because it's just some random bullshit. We're not going to come back to it. At least in my situation, it does give us a chance to just do Hans Christian Andersen part two. I don't give a fuck. I say we take it to the airmail and to the Reddit. I'm fine with that.
Okay. All right. Well, with that in mind, let's, I got one little up top thing that I think would hit for you if you haven't. I mean, I'm pretty much know it'll hit for you if you haven't seen it already, and I hope you haven't, because if you've seen it, then it's gonna ruin it. But so I'm sharing my screen right now. Also, if you're only listening, sorry, I'll explain it to you after we get it done. But like, can you see my screen yet, Joe?
I can, and I've definitely never seen this.
Okay, so this is a post I saw on Reddit. It's a screenshot of a tweet. The tweet is from some Twitter user.
Oh, Black People Twitter. I know this is going to be a banger.
Black People Twitter. And that, I feel like, is a little misleading, the fact that it comes from Black People Twitter, in a way that hits. You'll see what I mean in a minute. So this black lady on Twitter is, quote, tweeting another tweet, which is a response, right? And the quote, the original tweet that she's quoting is a picture of Jennifer Lopez on the red carpet. And this person says, Jennifer Lopez is far more beautiful than her. Right.
Okay.
And this lady has quoted that and said, I could give you $1 million in 10 tries and you would never guess who is in the picture this person is replying to, who they are saying Jennifer Lopez is far more beautiful than her. So would you like to participate, Cho?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
I would. And so I'm not saying that I'm going to do 10 tries, but that's how many ostensibly that I have per this tweet. And I have to imagine that this is at least somewhat in the context of putting on airs, obviously,
I'm worried that you would get there if I even gave you the opportunity to guess.
Because, you were worried that I would use the most basic amount of intelligence that a human being could
what
have.
What I mean is, like, even saying to you, do you want to guess? I considered not doing that because I thought it's like he's going to know it's POA related, which may allow him to get there.
They're still saying $1 million and 10 tries. Okay. All right. It's still difficult because my brain is going in several different directions because the way that she's saying it makes me think like it might not even be an actual person. It might be like a cartoon character, a fictional character, or something like that. For some stupid reason, my brain went immediately to Fergie, the Duchess of Cornwall. But I'm like, no, because Fergie actually was a good-looking person. That wouldn't be a stupid thing to say. Jennifer Lopez is far more beautiful than her. Okay. Is it... Did they show, like, a picture of one of the old bucktooth royals that had, like, three arms or some shit because of inbreeding? Was it that?
No. No.
Okay. Is it a picture of dead Queen Elizabeth on a cold slab?
No.
Okay. Is it someone that like Mr. Bean porked in an episode of Mr. Bean?
No, I'm about to show you. I'm about to click.
Okay.
It.
Okay. Hold on. Is it a lady falling off a building in an episode of Benny Hill?
No. No.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
All right, here it goes. Everybody's just listening.
I almost went with a baby.
It's the first, and it's Prince Harry. Harry and Meghan released the first public photo of baby Lilibet Diana Mountbatten Windsor on her first birthday.
God,
so it is a one-year-old royal baby looking very babyish and cute and whatnot. And that's and this lady responded to that tweet with Jennifer Lopez is way harder than her.
I swear to God. After the Duchess Fergie, one of the first things that came to my mind was like, I bet you it's a child, because I bet you anything it's a child. And then I got so wrapped up in improv and all my hits that I forgot that I wanted to mention that so I could be right. But yeah, that's but I didn't expect it to be a fucking baby.
Yeah, full bore baby. Yeah.
I didn't even know that they named her Lilibet. I like that. That's neat. I'd like to name all my kids after my granny. That'd be sweet.
Right. Lilibet was the nickname of Elizabeth.
Of
right,
Elizabeth, yeah, yeah. Lilibet. Yeah. Also, Cabbage.
That's pretty different. I feel like Lilibet.
It is different.
Lilibet,
yeah,
way more easy on the ears and cutesy and what's the word I'm looking for? Not approachable. What's the word? Accessible. Way
accessible,
more accessible,
yeah.
Than Cabbage.
It was
Queen
Philip.
Cabbage? What
it
the
was
hell?
Philip exclusively that called her Cabbage, and I
well,
never found out
hit.
Why.
Yeah.
But my theory on why he called her Cabbage was that he was like, you know, she's not much to look at, but she is good for me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? or she kind of don't hit, but like I know I need her.
Yeah. I mean, knowing him, it's probably something like that. Yeah.
Racist.
Could just be that, you know, her farts stink or
smell
something.
Yeah.
You know, smell like cabbage. That'd be hilarious if that was the origin of the Queen's nickname. She had cabbage farts. All right, so you're talking about Hans Christian Andersen a little bit. Before we get to that, my subject today is completely out of left field. And I was going to say I don't remember how I landed on this, but that's not true. I do remember, and we'll retrace the steps, I guess, as well. I'm talking about Chinese eunuchs. That's what I'm talking about.
Eunuchs, like cutting a Chinese person's dick off?
Yes, eunuchs in the court of the Chinese dynasties of yesteryear, because they were a big deal.
Yeah, man. Apparently, back in the day, if you were going to be in a royal court, it seems like some people just had to get their dicks cut off.
I mean, in China, that was 100% the case.
Yeah.
And we'll talk about why. So, first of all, I mentioned this briefly to Drew on Well Read the week that you weren't there, because I had just found this, and I told him, it's like, and as I do this, if I actually follow through this, which I intend to just for my own personal enjoyment, I'll bring some of it to POA as we go along. I'm about to start learning some China stuff. I don't mean Chinese or whatever. I just like, you know, they've been over there doing their thing for so long.
Insane.
And like, we've just pretty much ignored every single bit of it.
Sure have. Except the noodles.
West. Like, right. Yeah. Like, they come over here and made fried chicken for us and that hits and everything. But like, you know, they don't actually eat that. Even the stuff like we associate with China ain't even actually China.
No.
You know what I mean?
Much like Mexico. Like,
that's how ignorant we are about China. But in terms of Chinese history, especially like, again, dude, they've been an ongoing civilization for like thousands of years. And like you find out along the way that like a lot of stuff that happened in the West that's noteworthy or things that were invented or whatever, they had done that in China or whatever.
Of course.
But it's like we just don't count none of that.
Right.
They don't hit for us or whatever.
Right.
So anyway, I've always heard that I'll come across these little tidbits of Chinese history, and it's always wild as hell. Like, I don't know if you remember when we were talking about when I did an episode on pirates. I talked about pirates because pirates.
It was episode number 5, I think.
And,
so it was way long ago.
It was a long time ago, but it wasn't that early on, I don't think.
Okay.
It was after we went remote. It was a remote episode. So
I've been thinking about that episode a lot because I've been reading some more pirate stuff, and I'm like, fuck, we got to do a sequel.
Yeah, pirates hit for me. But in that episode I mentioned, I found in my, that's this example of what I'm talking about. You start reading up on pirates, you find out that one of the most powerful and successful pirates, maybe the most of all time, was a Chinese woman, a Chinese lady pirate who commanded a pirate fleet of like 1,000 ships or something like that in the Pacific Ocean.
How?
And whatnot. Well, I mean, you know, the how is kind of raven, but the fact that she held on to it is still wild, because it was like she was, you know, her man was like Chinese Blackbeard, right?
Okay.
Yeah, she was with Chinese Blackbeard, and he died.
A really thin mustache and Blackbeard, yeah.
Black mustache, black stringy mustache, right. And then he died, and she took over, but, like, kept it, you know, kept control of it. And I don't, and as I recall, she never got executed or nothing either. Like, she got away with it. Like, she just did it forever and then, like, retired peacefully with all her hits and treasures and stuff. I'm pretty sure.
You say the answer is pretty raven, and, like, I get it. It's like, oh, well, she didn't actually create it. Her man did all the work, and then she took over it. But, like, that's still...
I know.
No, I know. I'm saying, like, that's still
the only
fucking,
way,
like,
that ever could have happened.
Of course it is. But my point that I'm about to say is, like, that is the only way it could ever happen. But I'm still amazed that it happened. Like, I'm still amazed that it didn't go to his boy. You know what I mean? Like, like the fact that they were like, well, he's done, so obviously we have to give it to his girlfriend. Like, that just shows me that, like, perhaps, I'm not certain, you're about to learn China, not me. Me through proxy will learn China.
Yes.
But, like, were they just more progressive than we are? Because, like, it's
I don't think so.
But I was just going to say, to this day, if I heard a man built this fucking Fortune 500 company up and then he died and his wife took over, even now I'd be like, God damn, you know, that's a crazy person to pass it off to.
Yeah, no, I haven't yet started my journey of learning China, but, and I would never presume to expect that I can learn all of China, but, you know, I'm going to learn.
Not with that attitude.
Well, you know, be a China learning hobbyist. But anyway, in what little I've read, and some of it will come up today, they don't seem like they were more progressive than us back then. And I don't think they are now either. I mean, I'm not like, you know, as far as all that goes, like, I know that they crazy racist over there and everything, you know, against other types of Asians, certainly.
Vietnamese,
like,
don't hit for them.
Right, yeah, all that type of thing. So, I mean, you know, I don't think they're overly progressive or anything. Also,
well,
you know, they'll kill your ass for talking shit about the government and whatnot. Like, you know, they're not exactly a socialist utopia, China.
I don't think
they've ever been overly open-minded.
I didn't ask if they were a progressive people. I asked if they were more progressive than us. That's what I asked.
Well, I think that this might be an ignorant thing to say. I mean, it is. It's the definition of an ignorant thing to say, because I'm pulling it out of my ass and it's based on nothing except my general perception of the world. But I think that they're not, and they aren't now and never have been, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Not that we hit. We don't hit as far as that goes.
No, we don't hit.
I'm just saying they're not, you know, no, I don't think they're particularly progressive compared to us now. Or back then, except I say back then, we wasn't even us yet in the back then. We were Indians, you know.
I mean, me and you
weren't Indians, but America was Indians, and that, you know, we was England or whatever. Anyway,
well, goddamn, dude, when a lot of them was doing their them, and we was barely even the ones we weren't before now. You know what I mean? Because their civilization has been, if that makes sense, what I said, right, to you.
Yeah, because China been China since, like, thousands of years ago at a point when, like, England wasn't England yet.
Right.
So, like,
nothing.
England was still, like...
Nobody was shit.
England's a bunch of fucking, you know, goddamn druids, rock-worshipping druids and shit with blue spirals painted on their faces and fucking stuff like that.
I was going to call them rock people, but yes, they are druids. You're correct. Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, anyway... So I've just decided recently I'm fixing to learn China. It's my first step along the way. How I landed on Unix specifically is I happened across this history meme right on Reddit that was some joke that I didn't get because I didn't have the context about life in harems, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So at first, I wanted to talk about harems, right? Because I was like, that's a cool subject. But I had trouble. I don't hit at research, evidently. Not, you know, just using Google. I feel like Google is not as good as it used to be or something.
It's not,
somehow.
Because so much of it is ads.
Right.
Like,
well, anyway.
You don't know.
So I tried to find some good shit about old timey harem stuff, and it was hard for me. I think you need like primary sources, or you need to go to a goddamn library or something, like a university library. And I ain't doing all that. But anyway, along the way, it shifted though. So at first, I see this thing about harems, and I found out a little bit about harems, which is that like people don't realize how cutthroat and wild.
Are you going to do a separate episode specifically on harems though?
No, okay, because I have been unable to.
Yeah,
find okay. enough stuff about yeah. it to do like a whole I was gonna episode say, or a whole segment on it.
Yeah, because I was going to say I recently put in the doc that I wanted to do an episode on Heidi Fly, so I was saying we could do a really good combo there. But go ahead.
Well, so no, but what little I did find is just like people don't realize how cutthroat and savage life in a harem was. And not all harems were created equal. Like the Turks, the Ottomans had harems, and the Mongols and the Chinese. They all these different cultures had harems and. Not saying they were all the same, but in a lot of them, like these women's, like you had all these women's in a harem, right? The only way really to achieve any kind of higher social status was to get knocked up with the Khan or the Sultan or the Emperor's baby, right?
Right.
That's the only way to make a hit inside a harem, right? Otherwise you're just a sex object, right? Right. But still, and this will come up later too, it's like might have been preferable to most of just general life outside of
sure.
the palace at that time, even if you were just a, you know, just there for porking. You know what right. I mean? It's like better than fucking plucking being ducks in the rice paddy yeah, yeah. for 40 years and then say, coughing like, to death. You know, like,
if you're just a sex object, you're still, and again, this is going to sound bad, but like, the people for whom you are a sex object live a very privileged life, and therefore you get to live it by proxy, at least for a moment.
Well, again, that will be a recurring theme over the course of this little discussion here, because the same is true for eunuchs. But before we get to eunuchs, so what would happen a lot of times is these ladies in these harems, like if a different one managed to get pregnant or whatever, other ones would like try to kill her ass, God poison damn. Her or that type of shit, you know, to keep her from, you know, cause they want that spot or whatever. They want her to have it. And they know she's pregnant. So killing her and the baby both. And also like if they didn't kill her and she had the baby, these other harem ladies, they would also, you know, they'd throw these babies in rivers and stuff if they could. Like they'd kill the babies too. If it was a son, if it was a girl, obviously nobody gave a fuck because that didn't matter. But if it was a if they had a son, I'm saying in the context of all this, but if it was a son that could have any kind of claim to the throne, and they were these other women were jealous that so they'd kill each other, they'd kill each other's babies, all this stuff. It was wild, evidently. So I tried to find some more sources on that and I couldn't. What I did find though, and led me down this separate rabbit hole, was that in a lot of these cultures, China included, what they started doing to protect like the absolute legitimacy of any kind of parentage that resulted from a harem lady getting pregnant, right?
Tiger so you, curse.
You track the yeah, I'm sure that tiger dragon curse actually.
Yeah,
right, but anyway, they what they ended up doing was they were like, well, we got to have somebody to watch these women's, right?
Pimp.
Protect them from each other, guard them, whatever. Make them food, bring them food, whatever. All whatever they got to be attended to. These ladies, and we can't have just dudes doing that because dudes might fuck them, right? Because that's how dudes be, right? And if dudes fuck them and they get pregnant with that dude's baby,
right?
I might not know me, the emperor, and I might think that's my baby, and it ain't my baby, which means it ain't worth nothing. Then I got to throw that another baby off a cliff, right? I've already done three girl babies this week. Now I got to do another one just because it ain't mine, right? Like, just saying. But so what they came up with for that was they're like, well, we'll just cut all these dudes' dicks off.
Yeah.
That work in the harem or in the palace because they ain't gonna be fucking nobody if we cut their dicks off, right? Obviously. So that was the solution. So that meant now they started having eunuchs working in the palace, and that's the origin story of it. And that led me to just looking into eunuchs in general in China. Yes.
Before we move on, if you were in, and this would be a horrible job to have, it would be horrible. I'm not advocating for it, but, you know, work's work, especially back in the Ottoman Empire or whatever. If you were the person in charge of having to throw the babies off of a cliff into the sea, would you go discus or shot put? You know what I mean? Because I think I'd switch it up, but grabbing them by the ankles and like giving a couple good twists, like eventually you're doing this so many times, you're going to make a sport out of it and go for distance. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, yeah, I think the ankle toss is probably the most
popular,
efficacious technique, you know, yeah. But I haven't done the research properly, but, yeah, so that's how it started. From what I can find, this started in like, year 150 ish.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah. Year 150 post Jesus, which I have no idea what they called that year, but it wasn't that.
It wasn't
that. That's the example I'm talking about. Like, no clue. Like, it could have been year 3842 for them already back then. Or right. I have no idea. But anyway.
Well, it would depend on who it was, because, like, that's, you know, that's recorded history, right? So they're like, now we're going to keep up with it. So starting today, this is year one. Well, that's just certain people said that. There were possibly people who had already been writing it down. You know what I mean? So to them, it was like, no, I have been keeping a log of this for 48 goddamn years. It's 49. You know what I mean? Right.
Yes. So it started around year 150, and it went all the way up until 1924. They did not abolish the Unix system in China until 1924.
My granny was faux.
Yeah, wild. When your granny was born, it was dickless Chinese fellers working in the palace over there. So
that's bananas.
Also, when it first started, you know, they just got enough to staff the harem or whatever, but I guess it was working out well, because they're like, man, you know, dudes are a lot easier to handle. Mm-hmm. After you cut their dicks off.
Inarguable.
Right. I guess they figured that out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because they started getting more, they started assigning more and more tasks to eunuchs till eventually the palace, the Forbidden City, the Imperial Palace grounds, eventually at the height of the eunuch era or whatever, had like 60,000 eunuchs in it, right? Doing jobs. So it's like a whole city of dickless fellers, keeping the trains running on time and whatnot. The way they sourced these guys, there was a bunch of different ways. And this is what I was saying earlier about the recurring theme. So basically they could either be bought, right? Usually as a child, naturally.
Man. Don't even get your dick for a little bit. That's better, actually. Honestly, that might be better.
I mean, if you got to get
your dick cut off, I guess it is better. It's kind of like being blind from birth versus getting blinded at 18. Like, I'm going blind from birth just because, like, at least I don't know. I mean, this might be horribly offensive to blind people and dickless Chinese people, but, like, goddamn, at least I wouldn't have to miss the dance, but in reverse, you know?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with that. But it says about an eighth of the eunuchs that during this time were bought as young children from their families. So their families be like, shee wee, you got to pay this rice bill or whatever. You know, I don't know how we're going to do it. And they would be like, well, we can sell Wang, you know, and then they would.
Hey, that's good.
Yeah. And so
did you mean to do that?
No, but I do get it now. I mean, it's like, you know,
a lot of their last names.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Kind of sound like a wiener.
Right, yeah. Wang Dong. Sure. Yeah. There have probably been a few of them. But anyway, so they bought them as kids a lot of times, but not exclusively. Also, people who just super did not hit, and you know, like beggars and stuff, people who like couldn't get nothing going, like couldn't even get a duck to pluck in the mud, right? Like people like that, some of the men, they would like, they would volunteer to have their dicks cut off.
That's like taking the black.
Right. Well, and that was the taking the black version was another way in which they acquired eunuchs. It really worked that way. If you got caught doing a crime, they would be like, depending on the crime, obviously, they'd be like, all right, we can either kill your ass or we can cut your dick off and you can work in the palace, right? So it, right. It was like taking the black, and you know, obviously a lot of them chose to have their dicks cut off. And then finally, the last way was, this is basically the same as the poverty one, but like some guys thought that, you know, it seemed like a cushy gig. It seemed better than, you know, hauling these buckets of stuff on each end of a stick on your shoulders. They seemed to do that a lot back then, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This dude does this for 15 years and he's like, I'd rather just not have a dick and get to wear a robe and be in the castle and stare at titties all day or whatever than keep doing this shit. So like about half of them volunteered. The other half were either took the black version to avoid execution or they were bought as children. That's where most of them came from. But there was a big demand for dickless Chinese people. Yes, go ahead.
On that note of like taking the black and things like that, I don't know if this – I want to know, and I'm sure you don't know, but I guess I'm just asking a rhetorical thought starter question of, like, when that kind of stopped being a thing in the United States, because not cutting dicks off is what I mean, but, like, used to when there was – like, someone was going to go to jail, they would often have a thing like that. Like, when I was a kid in my church, half of the older men – and maybe – and I know you didn't go to church, but you still had old men in your town – they would give their testimonies and stuff, and a lot of them were former military men, but the only reason that they were in the military, so many of them had the same story, was that they committed a crime or did something, and the judge was like, hey, so you can either go serve this time in jail or you can go serve the military. We clearly don't do that anymore because I know dudes in jail who would have taken that fucking deal. You know what I mean? So like,
yeah, you're right. There was a movie that used to hit for me, and it shows all these. I mean, I've seen so many war movies, and there was one war movie where it showed it's like about a squad of dudes naturally, and they showed how each of them came to be in the military, and one of them was a criminal who like had that. God damn it! That's
so we used to have
me,
like
I can't remember
version,
who the actor is or nothing.
Yeah, we were. Yeah, we used to have a version of taking the black, and like frankly, like. I mean, maybe it still kind of happens depending on the judge or something, but like there's so many things that frankly, A, you shouldn't go to jail with, period, for like they should not be, you know, you shouldn't be chained up for them, but it's like, okay, could we not let them do something else and be of service? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. But anyways, I was just wondering, I was like, I know that was still clearly going on in the 30s and 40s because of the age of some of these men. But like, yeah, we don't do that anymore, I guess.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a good point. I hadn't ever really thought about that. But I mean, yeah, no, you're right. That is wild. So
carry on.
That's how they like procured their dickless army. But I mean, do you want to hear about the process or not?
Yes. Okay. Well, okay, who the fuck do you think I am?
Well, dude, I mean, you know, it's pretty rough, some of this, obviously.
I can handle it.
Especially for two dudes to talk about. So they had a dedicated dick chop hut, right? They had a – it was called the Chang Zoo, right?
I don't know why that's funny.
That was where you went to have your dick cut off. They also had a dedicated that translated as knifer, the imperial knifer. Was like the designated guy to cut everybody's dick off.
And right.
Apparently, I mean, you know, again, 70,000 people. In the palace, this, I say, it's a full time job. Full time job cutting dicks off. I wonder how many dicks he got through in a day. It doesn't say that here. But anyway, he had his own apprentices and stuff. And I'm sure it's like the way everything worked back then. I'm sure it's like this dude, it's like, you know, my daddy cut dicks off.
Dicks
his
off?
Daddy cut dicks off.
And you by
know,
God.
My son is going to cut dicks off. Right. Like, I'm sure it worked that way. But anyway,
what if that's the etymology of the last name Wang?
Yeah, I don't know. Hell,
you know, like
be.
My people worked in the forest.
Well, it does say here the Chinese words for that position, the guy which we translate as the knifer. And of course, I'm going to butcher this, but it's Dao Zi Zhang. Dao Zi Zhang. Dao Zi Zhang. I don't know. But anyway,
Chinese is definitely a language where. Even
First
if
of all,
you're
not even called Chinese, but
well, Mandarin, whatever,
or Cantonese, but yeah, this would be Mandarin,
Cantonese, either in any of the languages of the Orient. I don't know, I can't explain this. Like, I can say a Mexican word, and I don't think anyone would be like, oh, you're being racist. I'm like, no, I just spoke something in Spanish, but if I say a Chinese word, even if I was being earnest, like it's gonna sound like I'm making fun of them just because our
You know what I mean?
Yes, and the problem with that is that, as I understand it, their language is one where it's not even about just you saying the words right, like pronouncing it right. Tone is also part of it.
Yep.
So they'll have words that are spelled and are like pronounced exactly the same way, but you use a different tone when you say those words and it means a different thing. So like you can't, you are not saying it right.
Right. Yeah.
If you don't attempt to do like, meow,
I know.
Like,
right.
Like that, right.
But if you, like, but if like, me and you do that, like
it sounds awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right,
by the way, I wouldn't say their language is written so much as drawn. I've seen it.
Yeah, that dude.
It's wild.
Wild. So
it's wild. But yes, you're correct. Like, if I was trying to actually pronounce something in Cantonese or whatever, I'm supposed to go, you know, whatever. But, like, that ain't a good sound coming from me.
No, I agree. So they'd take you to the dick chop hut where the knifer man is and his apprentices, and he had a whole crew, and they put you down on a table and tightly wrap your abdomen and your thighs to like constrict the blood flow so you don't bleed out when they chop your junk off, right?
Yeah.
And then so they set you down, they do that, your dick's exposed, they wrap your abdomen and thighs very tightly, and then they apply the local anesthetic to your genitals. Would you like to guess what the local anesthetic was in the Qing dynasty of China?
I would like to guess. I threw out opium, and then I was going to go cocaine, but I was like, no, this wouldn't be wild for Trey to say. I'm throwing this out there, and just let me get through it. There is some form of fish native to this country, and their poison numbs things, so they milk a fish.
Right.
Yeah. No?
Well, I mean, of course not, no, but I like the, you know, it's a valiant effort. The thing about this is what makes it funny and wild to me is that it's like that, what you just said, if that existed, that would hit because the fish milk,
I know what
this
it is.
Fish milk numbs stuff. This local anesthetic they're using seems to me to have the complete opposite effect of what is supposedly intended. So
they hit you in the head with a mallet and just knock you out.
No, but even that, I think, would be better than the truth. The local anesthetic during the late Qing or Qing dynasty in China, when this was happening, was hot chili sauce.
Oh, like, dude, that I've accidentally done that.
It's almost like, well, because they would put it on there three times over.
I bet you'll want us to cut your dick off after
that. It's like, maybe he'll be dying for us to cut his dick off if we make it we set it on fire with hot chili sauce.
Yeah.
Like, insane. It's like
fried up afterwards, at least, you know?
So they put the peppers on your dick, right? And then the guy, the knifer, would ask a ceremonial question, basically, will you regret this or not? And they said if the man showed any doubt whatsoever, they would halt the operation, which I found surprising. But I guess that very rarely happened. Once you get to this point, especially the ones that are sold as kids, it's like, it doesn't really say what the alternative is. Anyway, I don't know. But so it was a ceremonial question. They say yes. Then they grab your dick and balls both at the same time, hold them up, and just one. And I did it single slash.
They cut from the gooch?
Single slash gooch up one time, one shot, one kill. Cut it all off at once. Then they shoved a pewter needle.
That's that metal that melts
into the hole at the end of the wound. Yeah, because
the start of your urethra.
Yes, exactly. Because if they didn't, it would seal up. Which, especially 2,000 years ago, I mean, that was literally a death sentence. So they
would you just start peeing out your butt?
No, I mean, no, you just die if it sealed up. So that's why they had to put the needle in there. And then because there's a needle in there, I told you this shit is rough.
No, keep going. This is important.
Also
this
worried
is history.
That, like, I also, when I asked if you wanted to hear this part, it's like, I wonder if people have turned this off or skipped ahead because it's pretty hard to listen to, especially if
just showed up right on time, by the way. Dad, we're talking about getting your dick cut off in ancient
China.
China.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's like, especially if you're a penis owner, I mean, it's rough. Yeah. It's rough for me to talk about. But anyway, I'm almost done, though, okay, with this part. They'd shove the pewter needle in there, and they'd dress the wound. They'd wrap it up. Then, I don't know why they did this. It doesn't say, I guess, to keep them from passing out or something. But the assistants, the apprentices, after they dressed the wound, they would like walk the new eunuch around the room for 3 hours before they'd let him lie down and rest. Right?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
To get the blood
also,
going again.
The spigot that's in there to keep your, you know, dick hole from sealing up. It also means you can't pee. Right. So because you can't pee, you ain't allowed to drink nothing. And it takes 3 days, which is right on the borderline.
Oh my God.
Will kill you. Right.
Right.
So like you're thirsting to death, literally almost. And also imagine even without drinking water for 3 days, imagine you get 8 hours in, you're like, oh shit, I need to pee. Right. Now you got 2.5 days left and you can't. At the end of 3 days, they pull the pewter needle out. And if pee came out, success. Right. If it didn't, like, then that apparently meant it had been botched and there was nothing on earth that could save the eunuch from a very painful death.
Hilarious sentence that was one time said, we're going to cut your dick off and it gets worse.
Right. Yeah. And but it says that only accounted for about 2% of cases. So it had a pretty good success rate. Anyway, the wounds would heal after 100 days and then they would assume their whatever their duties were going
to
be.
Then you got to go to work.
Right. Yes. As a slave, a dickless slave. But again, you know, it might have beaten the fucking duck bucket life.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But anyway.
Because you get to eat the scraps, you know.
Right. So the other thing was after they cut it all off, they gave it to you in a sealed container called a bowl, right? Which translated as the three preciouses. Right, meaning your wiener and your two
your
nuts,
dick.
Right? Your three preciouses. They gave it to you in a sealed container, and as a eunuch, you were supposed to keep up with that for your whole life.
What?
I don't know. Well, because actually, I was going to say I don't know why, but I do know why. They believe that when a eunuch finally died, he had to be buried with his bowel, with his three preciouses, because he'd be reunited with his dick in the afterlife, right? Which is like, I totally understand why a dickless man would be inclined to want to believe that. You know what I mean? It's a nice fantasy.
It's always cracked me up, the people who simultaneously believe in God and the afterlife and cutting people's dicks off.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So tradition stated that, okay, you need to be buried with your bowel, your three preciouses, to be reunited in the afterlife. But if you, like, lost them or they were stolen from you or something like that along the way, and you went to the afterlife without your bowel, tradition stated that John Wang, where's Wang again? John Wang, the king of the underworld, would turn those who arrived without their preciouses into a female mule. So you get turned into a donkey
bitch.
If you ain't got your dick with it. Yeah, right.
Like, still beats plucking a duck.
Yeah, right. So anyway, and also, like, if you got any kind of promotion, eunuch promotion, ceremonially, you had to part of the process was you had to like present your jarred dick, I guess, is like I don't know. That was just part of it. Anyway, this had an effect on them. You know, it's like, I mean, George R. R. Martin, he wild. Seems like a segue, but it's not really.
Because
talking about Varys, because like you find out, you know, almost all of that those books in that show are
based
so
on the War of Roses,
incredibly captivating, and it's so great. Almost all of it he pulled from like actual history. Yes, in large part the War of the Roses, but not just that. Also, I'm saying the eunuch who rose to a position of like considerable power and everything, and everything about him, how he was bald, supple, sort of soft. I just said, I only said sorry to you because of bald. And then I realized that everything else that came after that could also be interpreted as I'm saying it applies to you, which I'm not. But anyway, digging myself a hole here. Anyway,
you froze up a minute, or were you making fun of me?
Not on purpose, but yeah, kind of.
Yeah. I figured so. I was thinking about Varys earlier when you were talking about, like, they were like, man, it turns out when you take a dude's dick away, they're a lot easier to get along with and control. And it's like, dude, honestly, like, I think Varys says this in the show, but it's like, because he was still a very intelligent person, but he had
no time to waste with women, and like he didn't like have those drives or whatever. He could just be completely focused and none of the like dick emotions would get in his way. Like, honestly, it makes a lot of sense.
It does, and that's why they started having more and more of them and assigning them more and more duties and everything. But what, so first of all, briefly, like I said, they had all the harem duties. They were the official concubine department, right?
Right.
That's how it started. But then that's, it started doing all kinds of other stuff too. We mean rude.
Well, but I was just now thinking about the implications of this. It's like, not only do you get your dick cut off, then your job is to help dudes get pussy.
Yeah, but that, I mean, yes, it is rude, but that's literally the whole entire origin of the whole, you know, pursuit or proceedings or whatever.
I just started thinking about it from if that happened to me.
Right. So that's how it started, but then that was their initial duties, but then they started getting more and more stuff, and eventually they ran, like, all the, you know, they were like the equivalent of the accountants for the palace and the, like, you know, logistics and entertainment. And, I mean, everything. Eventually, they pretty much were running almost everything except for, like, security. Like, the actual, you know, like, armed guards and stuff, couldn't have them be dickless, obviously. But
because this does fuck your testosterone, right?
Yes, right. That's what I started to say about Varys. Like, the dude they got, Conleth Hill or whatever his name is, that they cast, and the way they made him look is also like appropriate, because apparently it did that. You wouldn't grow facial hair anymore. They'd be like bald, smooth, soft, you know, like that, not strong, like that type of shit. So anyway, those were their duties and stuff. And even though, you know, it didn't hit for everybody being a dickless slave. Imagine that.
Yeah,
right.
I know.
So sometimes they'd push back. They'd try to escape or whatever. And if they had various punishments, the first time they'd just lock you up for 2 weeks. And you'd after 2 weeks of being locked up, they'd give you 20 blows with a cane or whatever, then send you back to work.
In your stump?
Second time. No, just generally. Second time, they put you in a big, sort of like a stocks. It's like a big wooden square that they stick your head through like that, and you're just stuck like this for 2 months, right?
Do you think I don't know what stocks are, or you just...
No, well, this ain't the stock. This is a separate thing called a kangway or whatever, but I'm saying it is sort of like the stocks.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway... Third time, they'd banish you to Shenyang. I don't know shit about Shenyang, but it must not hit.
Right, that's their gulag or whatever. They're setting them adrift.
It's up near North Korea, so it's probably like cold as fuck and in the mountains or something. So it's probably what that's about. Getting sent to Siberia.
Did it ever hit in North Korea?
I have no idea. But
I'm going to say that it didn't.
For more minor offenses, you'd be punished by bastinado, which was... they'd lay you down and they'd take your shoes off, and then they'd whip the shit out of your bare feet with a bamboo stick.
That don't hit.
80 to 100 times. Then they'd dress the wounds, and then 3 days later, they'd whip the wounds again.
It's tender.
Yeah, which they called raising the scabs.
Oh, my God.
But anyway, so that's a little, you know, fun facts about eunuch stuff. But I said they came in real handy, like you were saying, so they wanted more and more of them. Eventually, there's like 60,000 eunuchs running around. Well, that led to problems because they started like consolidating actual power. I mean, they had so many of them and they were so close to the, you know, the seats of power and influence and stuff that over the years in China, they like, I mean, there were eunuchs like led to the fall of whole empires and stuff. They like installed their own emperors at like military coups and all kinds of wild shit. And then they also, every now and then, they could rise to military prominence. One of the greatest generals in Chinese history, Zhang He, whatever. He was a eunuch, apparently. So, but the whole time, they did not hit for people.
Right.
Like, even when they got very powerful and stuff, and they had actual influence, and they were like, you did not really want to fuck with the eunuchs at a certain point. They still were like the lowest of the low in society's eyes because they were dickless but also like conniving and sneaky. This is what everybody said and thought about them. You know, it's like you can't trust a eunuch kind of thing that's pretty much how they approach Varys in Game of Thrones. You know what I mean? So it's like
he was a freak.
So they were powerful and influential, but also reviled and loathed. And that ended up being a bad combination, which led to a certain emperor at one point cracking down on the eunuch thing and really cutting way back on dickless Chinese people. But they still had them up until 1924 when the last remaining emperor, you know, they ain't got an emperor no more, right? Communist right. China, they got old Winnie the Pooh over there, president or prime minister, whatever the hell he is. But anyway, the last emperor, a guy named Pooh Yi, he still had some dickless fellers working for him, but they got rid of their last emperor in 1924, and along with him, all the eunuch, or okay, you know, no more right. eunuchs since
as
then.
Soon as so, he was out, that's gone.
Yeah. So, man, that's eunuchs for you.
Let me say this, because I've been thinking about this the whole time you've been talking, but especially now that we've talked about Varys and all of this stuff, and it goes back to what you were saying at first. So this is kind of, maybe it makes sense to me about how, like, China's been, you know, doing fucking crazy ass, both good and bad shit for, like, since the dawn of time. But we've more than not just kind of ignored it, not cared to know, whatever. And I guess that's the explanation for this, but just from an entertainment standpoint, doesn't make sense. Like, why isn't there a fucking HBO show about this shit? Because, like, bro, what?
Very, 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 very simple answer for that. For
because of
all
the Asian
of
market.
Television
because
history
of the Asian market, right?
Up until the past maybe 10 years. No, dude, there wasn't a studio executive in this fucking town who was going to green light a show made up entirely of Chinese people and put
right.
it on it. You know, never. Right. And like they might like nowadays.
Well, yeah, now it's different.
In Joe Biden's woke ass America.
Yeah, right.
We got to shove a bunch of Chinese stuff down your throat. No, I'm kidding. But like nowadays they might. I mean, they kind of did. There was, but even you see that show Marco Polo on Netflix?
No,
it was all Mongols. But even that, the protagonist was Marco Polo, a blonde haired, blue eyed European
okay.
white guy. Right.
Okay.
But everybody else was Mongolian.
Okay.
You know, so.
Okay. But by the way, that I understand that Hollywood sucks and wouldn't make a cast a bunch of Chinese people. But old Hollywood would just
turn them white.
Yeah. Like
and just say yeah. John Wayne, play the Emperor of China.
I wasn't going to say turn them white.
Frank Sinatra,
like they were just,
play Jun Yang.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. It's
sure.
like that. That
yeah. Just whitewash
like,
it. Yeah, I
yeah.
Mean, that's a. I mean, yeah, sure. I'm
so
with
that
you on
blows
that.
My mind. But my. I guess my counterpoint to that is like maybe you'd think there was a time Hollywood was so shitty that they would love making a show about some shit Chinese people did that didn't hit, which this don't. You know, but like, regardless of all that, now that we are living in Joe Biden's America, boo, a fucking HBO show that was like equal parts Game of Thrones and Rome and The Sopranos, because that's uh-huh. when you were talking about the harem and how they would kill, you know, the pregnant women or whatever, and how yeah. it was operated, that got me thinking of like, you know, a mob show or whatever, but like, dude, this would fucking rule, and I don't mean as just like a side plot in a Game of Thrones. Like, a fucking show about how that harem was run would be amazing, and I would be so fucking into it. But again, as you said, too many Chinese people got to get involved, so what are you going to do?
Well, for that, you could do a like Ottoman harem, which was actually, that was the first harem I was reading about, because Ottomans are like, they brown, but they like... you know, Turks are like European, you know what I mean?
Right.
They're brown and like, they're tall, dark and handsome. They're sultry and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Chinese people. I love Chinese people. Don't get me wrong.
Me
but
too.
I'm saying
we're
not as, I'm talking about the American public as people perceive it. It's like China, you know, China,
they're
China
good,
and Chinese stuff is just like, feels more alien
the
to
Turks,
Americans in general or whatever. That, and that's the whole point of that's where we started this whole conversation at.
The Turks are a far more palatable Asian for the U.S. market. That is
right.
certainly
exactly.
for, that is
exactly.
100%
yes.
sure. Like that's 100% sure. Like the movie RRR crushed over here, but like the same thing, but all Chinese. Like there's only been one Hidden Dragon, Crouching Tiger in my life, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and it's wild because like our market is so important over there, or their market is so important to us You know what I mean? And that's, I guess that's one thing I was thinking about why they've never done this is because this
surely
would,
they have. Surely well, you no, can no, find I know. Chinese no, no, no. shows that are about
for
all
sure.
this stuff,
of
I would
course,
imagine.
Of course, but my reasoning on why maybe we hadn't was what I, my first thought was is that because their market is so important to us and this would be painting them in a less than favorable light, we never thought it would do well over there.
I don't know. You know what I mean? It's ancient history for them and they, you know, like... It just depends. I don't think that British people, I don't think they get upset at like
they don't
shows like The Last Kingdom or whatever when they show, you know what I mean, and
dude,
show
Germans don't get upset at Nazi stuff. Listen, not to get political, right. we're the only country where it's
no,
we don't
Japan
we're the only country that I know of.
Japan very much be like that too, but
really
but I'm not
well, I can say
well
that.
Japan and China they fucking hate each other, so I'm not saying right. because Japan is like that it means China's like that, but like I but no Japan is like the South and the Confederacy
right.
when it comes to World War II. Like
it's funny,
Germany is like the way Yort be, you know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes, I agree.
But
Germany
Japan
really did it right.
Japan kind of
is the Confederate
South.
To
act like it never, it you know, that they didn't not hit all that much or whatever.
It's funny you say that.
That's what I've always heard. I you know could be wrong, but I don't think that it is. So,
it's funny
anyway.
You say that. Me and Amber finally got around to watching Oppenheimer. I'm a huge Nolan fan and a huge history fan, but the movie's 3 hours long, and when it came out, we just had a baby. So what are you gonna do?
Where'd you get it at? Did you buy it on?
Yeah, bought it. Okay. Yeah, so we watched it. It was great. Now I got a freaking sweet system. It's still not the same as seeing it in IMAX, but it was dope. I loved it, and we watched it in 3 1-hour installments. Which didn't. I thought I was going to be mad, but honestly, it was nice. And the movie is so fucking good that each hour it felt like I was watching a little bit of a mini series, and I was so excited all day to be getting back to it. Like, could not recommend it more enough. I know I'm like making a bold statement. Hey, that new Christopher Nolan epic biopic was awesome. But while watching it, I kept having the thought of like, and Christopher Nolan does a great job of, yeah, there's a lot of rah-rah America stuff in it. You know what I mean? But he also does a really good job of painting the nuances of like, hey, we're not completely the good guys totally in this. Like, I know that's what we've always heard, but like, think about the effects of this, blah, blah, blah. And I started thinking, I was like, dude, even though it would offend half the people in America, I really would love to see a big budget World War II movie made from the perspective of the Japanese. You know what I mean?
I think I've never seen it, but I think the movie, first of all, Clint Eastwood, I think did that. With
the Iwo Jima.
Yeah, I think so. He put out, okay. He put out two movies like together. One of them was the,
yeah, but
Allied
his wasn't
perspective.
Sympathetic to the Japanese though. Was it?
I don't know. I don't remember if I saw it. Because it's funny, I watched the white one, and I was just, like, I'll skip the Japanese one.
Well, but I just
like,
can't imagine Clint Eastwood being sympathetic.
Or whatever when it came out. I don't know, man. I kind of think it was, anyway, he put out two movies at the same time, which that's a pretty cool thing, actually.
That is cool.
It's weird to me that don't ever really get talked about anymore.
Right.
Or replicated.
Yeah.
But yeah, he put out Flags of Our Fathers and The Sands of Iwo Jima. Right. And one of them was from the American perspective. One of them was from the Japanese perspective. There's also a movie called Toro, 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 which I've also never seen. It's supposed to be really, really good. And it, I believe, is from the Japanese perspective.
Well, I'm
going to
watch. I'm going to watch all of these and report back. Anyways.
Maybe it's not Toro, Toro, Toro. Maybe it's Toro, Toro,
My Neighbor Totoro. Is that the movie you're thinking of?
That's
the
very,
big fat
very,
cat.
Very different thing. Yeah. Tora, Tora, Tora. Sorry. It was an international co-production. It shows both perspectives. And it's about Pearl Harbor specifically.
Okay. Yeah. I'm interested in that.
Tora, Tora, Tora. Yeah. It was a joint American and Japanese production. So it was... It has American sequences and Japanese sequences, and I'm looking at the credits here, and damn, so the American sequences were directed by an American guy. The Japanese sequences were directed by Japanese directors. The screenplay, the American part was written by American. The Japanese part was written by Japanese.
I love that.
and obviously the actors in the American part are all American, and the actors in the Japanese parts are all Japanese. So yeah, damn, I need to watch this movie too.
And
it's definitely like, it's a highly regarded movie.
Let's both watch it and talk about it.
Just never gotten around to watching it. But anyway, all right.
Hey, let's
HCA.
Let's take a break real quick. Number one, because I'm not wearing my diaper. Number two, because I forgot to look up airmail. And as soon as we get back from this break, which we'll put a commercial in, I'm going to talk to y'all about the life of Hans Christian Andersen. We'll be right back.
Oh, Santa baby, the season for a fresh cut is finally here.
With the sponsors of today's show, I'm sorry, that was pathetic. Manscaped, baby, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming, have just launched their fifth-generation performance package to help you avoid another silent night in the bedroom this year. Take care of your special snowflake with the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra and watch your South Pole shine like never before. Get the best stocking stuffer of all by going to manscaped.com and using code POA for 20% off plus free shipping. Y'all know I've been a huge proponent of Manscaped and all the things that they do, whether it be the beard trimmers, the hedge trimmer, the lawnmower, all of that stuff, which I use literally every week, the ball deodorant, which I use literally every day. I can't say enough good things about Manscaped. However, I will try. Manscaped is a one-stop shop for your holiday needs. They have the perfect gift in the Performance Package 5.0 Ultra, which includes loads of perfect stocking stuffers. What could be better than giving the gift of good hygiene and a few laughs, starting with the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, baby? This is the crown jewel of holidays, and I dare say the best ball trimmer of all time. The electric razor's advanced skin-safe technology is a lifesaver and known for reducing nicks and cuts on Santa's sack, or as I say, nicks and cuts on your dicks and butts. That's right. All right. If you got somebody in your family that's got too much scruff, get them this for the holidays. Manscaped Beard Hedger. If you got nasty nose hairs, by the way, which I sure do, but not after I use the Weed Whacker 2.0 nose, ear, and hair trimmer. It's awesome. They also got boxers, which are really good. They're super comfortable. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code POA at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code POA. Say ho, ho, ho to a well-groomed mistletoe with Manscaped. Skew.
And we're back. It's time for History of Professor Cho's biography with Professor Cho on number one Dane, number one Denmark man, Hans Christian Andersen of fairy tale fame.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, go ahead.
Well, you usually always, you love hearing yourself talk, so you definitely always do the, hey, what do I know about him? I guess you mentioned that they're a fairy tale fame, but, you know, I thought maybe you'd do
like
something.
Like The Little Mermaid and
that's all right.
A lot of Disney movies or like cartoon movies and stuff. Little Mermaid and fucking Thumbelina and the stuff like that. Anyway,
yes, go ahead. Ugly Duckling, stuff like that.
I would like to say
Much of my information, I'm doing this not only because I like to let people know, but also because I want to shout out a podcast that really hits for me. The information that I got was from Hans' autobiography itself, which I thumbed. I just happened to have it at my house. The Encyclopedia Britannica and the podcast, which is wonderful. And if you're a fan of this show, you will be a fan of this show, especially if you like the history portion on here but want it to be accurate. The stuff you missed in history class, I highly recommend. And I'd actually heard this episode long before I wanted to talk about Hans Christian Andersen. I'd forgotten he was even from Denmark. So that just randomly came up when we did Denmark. And I was like, oh, kismet. I actually know a little bit. So anyways, check out that podcast. So Hans Christian Andersen was born April 2nd, 1805. His parents have two of the most 1805 professions that you will ever hear. His daddy was a cobbler and his mom was a drunken laundry maid. How about that?
Was the drunken part necessary? That made it sound like it was part of her job title.
I think it was a coincidence. What I think is that in 1805, you didn't hear it from women a lot. Like, women are rarely ever discussed as like being drunk or sots in the past. Like, the elite ones are, you know what I mean? Like, if you're a socialite, those women were drinking. But like, I don't know, like for me, it seems like women back in 1805, it's like, no, that's fun. You don't get to do that, you know?
Right. Yeah.
One of his grandfathers went insane, and his grandmother, the wife to this grandfather that went insane, she was thrown in jail. Why? I'm going to let you guess why this woman would be thrown in jail. I'll tell you, it wasn't for murder or anything like that. Yeah. Why was she thrown in jail?
For allowing her husband to go insane?
That's a great answer.
Yeah.
It's not true. She was thrown in jail after, I guess, he went insane. She was thrown in jail for having too many kids out of wedlock. You could just go to jail for me.
But, I mean, seriously, though, how many is too many? You said too many kids out of wedlock.
All I have here is too many. Honestly, I would say that back then,
two could have been too many. 14?
You know, for these people. Okay, because, okay, well, like,
all right. Out of wedlock, I guess, is the important part.
Because
back then, like, they had, everybody had 12 kids or whatever.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, so I'm just saying, like,
too many kids, that's like a shitload of kids. But the out of wedlock part is the operative part.
Yeah. Because it's like, if you won, it's like, okay, she made a mistake. I mean, we're going to call you a whore and stamp a scarlet letter to your chest, but like, absolutely, we're not going to throw you in jail. But after you do it so many times, it's like, oh, there's so many bastards running around. That's not a Danish accent, but still, you feel me. So after his daddy died, his mama took him to a fortune teller. And this fortune teller told Hans Christian Andersen and his mother, hey, I see such great promise in your future. You're going to go on to be a great man and famous around the world. Now, when she said this Hans says that's what inspired him to then become a famous person. So it's kind of like, it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, like, but, well, I mean, that's still, it's a far cry, especially I feel like in 1805 from like, I'm going to be a famous person to The Little Mermaid. Do you know what I mean? Like, specifically.
For sure.
Like,
for sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, he still had to hit that and decide to do that. And all she said was, you're going to be famous the world round. Well, he could have, you know, I don't know. He could have killed a whole bunch of people or, you know, porked more donkeys than anyone else around at that time. That might have got his name out there, you know. But he landed on writing.
He did. He did land on writing. But that wasn't the first thing he landed on. And I will get to that in a second. And a lot of that stuff with the Little Mermaid, a little questionable. Who fucking knows? He leaves for Copenhagen at 14 because his dad's dead. And they're telling him, like, hey, you're going to be famous. And he's like, well, I can't be famous in whatever their fucking small hometown was. I'm going to have to go to Copenhagen because I guess that's like the New York of Denmark or whatever. So he leaves for Copenhagen at 14. He had no money at all, no skills, no job. He went straight to the theater and he was just like, I'm going to be a theater person because they can be famous. But he didn't know what it was he wanted to do. He literally just wanted to be anything. Like, he just gets to the theater and he's like, I'm here. Let me hit. And he was a real, like, he was a hustler. And I'm about to mention a type of person that me and you know, this type of person. And we've talked about it a lot on how, like, wild it is to us and how we could never be this way. He was one of those hustlers that, like, he had no problem just going up to famous people and just asking them to help him. You know what I mean? And, like, you hear these stories a lot, even in today's society, like in the comedy world, where people will just have like no shame. They'll just be like, yeah, when I was starting out, I camped out behind George Carlin's house. And like, that's just, you know, and then people that aren't like us, that are not in the business, they're like, well, I mean, yeah, that's just how you have to do it to make it. And I've always heard that as like, I guess I'm never making it because I can't fucking do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm mortified by the thought. I play it the exact opposite. I borderline act. I mean, my philosophy is to just treat this other person like any other regular human person. Do you know what I mean? And I feel like and hope that that hits for most of them, right?
Yeah. You're the complete opposite, because you will find out that someone you hit for them and you'll be like, I'm going to still keep it at arm's distance.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yes. Well, that's what I was about to say. I'm so mortified by the thought of like bothering these people.
Yeah,
or
of
whatever.
Course.
Or being that guy, whatever that guy. I don't want to be that guy no matter what. So, yeah, I'll like, yeah, I do the opposite, like to my own detriment. I avoid these
people. It is to your own detriment a lot, but still way more admirable than being the opposite. But like, this is still different though. Even like, if you were to do that, if you were to start doing that, it would still be different than him, because like, you actually do hit. And you have things that you do. You have a body of work, and like, these people know you. He had nothing. Like, he was literally, it would be the equivalent of you doing it, but when you were 14. You know what I mean?
Who's he doing this to? Who are the hitting people in Copenhagen at the time? Like a mime? Like the best mime in fucking that part of Europe or what? Who's he going up to and asking for help? And what's he offering? What's he asking for? Like, what?
I'm glad you asked. One time, this was my next example, he crashed the party of the most famous opera singer, I guess, at the time. He barged into and crashed this party, not supposed to be there, does not know anybody there, barged into the dining room and just started singing and dancing. And also,
oh my God.
Right. He just starts singing and dancing.
Just thinking about
it. It's horrible, right? It's horrible.
Imagine you saw someone do that. Like if I went to a party at like T-Bone's house or something.
Right.
And some random Nashville street urchin comes in and starts like doing Indian Outlaw or something. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? No one knows who he is. He's just doing a cappella in front of everybody. Well, I mean, if it was Indian Outlaw, that'd be kind of funny.
That would be great.
Know, it'd be, yeah, that'd be wild.
Especially when you consider he didn't go on to be famous for singing and dancing.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That's not even his thing, but it gets worse. If you want to cringe even more, he gets through singing and dancing, and then he tells them all, "But I can cry. I can cry." And he just starts crying on command.
Is insane.
It's so bad.
You're telling me this worked somehow?
It worked. The opera singer who was there was so impressed that she personally started giving him lessons, and all the other guests gave him a shit ton of money so that he could pursue opera.
That's one of the most insane things I've ever heard in my life.
Which means, you know, backtracking on what I said, like, he clearly was fucking good. You know what I mean? And like, here's the deal. Well, in my opinion, you have to be a level above good. Like, if he had approached them in a normal way, it's like, oh, he was fine, let's help him out. But if you barge into a party, you've got to really fucking murder before you're going to get people to get over the fact that you've done this thing. Like, you've really got to fucking wow them. So I guess he did hit. It was never going to be realized how hard he could hit at opera, because a few months into his opera career, he lost his voice and had to quit. And then he has to quit. He has nothing to do. He goes home and like, was like, I'm going to kill myself. Like, this, I had my chance. I'm going to fucking kill myself, which, like, you know, I get. But he goes home. He has no money. Like, he'd taken all that money they gave him and spent it on opera stuff. But he didn't want to live with his mom again. He's like, fuck, I ain't got no money, but I don't want to live with my mom. So he lived in the closet at a whorehouse. Worst places.
Okay. Yeah. How do you swing that? Walk in and be like, could I just, you ain't using that closet. I don't know. They've used closets at whorehouses, right? But closets probably in high demand at a whorehouse, I would imagine.
Can't have
some voiceless vagrant staying in your I can't think of it. What are they called? The things that they like, not a corset, but a brassiere.
A boo something, right?
Like
Are you thinking of boudoir?
Yeah, what's a boudoir?
A boudoir, I think, is a whore's way of saying the bedroom. A sex worker. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I think step into my boudoir. I feel like boudoir means
a woman's bedroom or private room. You're right. Yeah.
Yeah. Boudoir. Okay, yeah. Okay. I know some things. Also, dude, now, granted, we're talking about the guy who has barged into a famous opera person's house and made all these people give him money. I'm sure he could handle being able to live in the closet of a whorehouse. Also, I don't know this for a fact, but like, you know, he had to mop up the cum. Like, he wasn't just like hanging out there. Anyways, at this point, he had become friends with a ton of artists that were willing to help him. Not only artists, but one of his buddies, this is crazy, one of his buddies was the guy who invented electromagnetism. So,
okay.
His most important buddy.
Who was that?
The guy who invented electromagnetism?
Yeah.
You would think I looked that up, but I didn't. I was just speaking. I didn't. I was just like, oh, that guy. Right on. Yeah, back to Hans Christian Andersen. His most important buddy, though, was not even that guy. His most important buddy was this dude named Jonas Cohen, who he was the director for the Royal Theater in Denmark. And this dude was able to get the king to set Hans Christian Andersen up with what you and I would refer to as a hit stipend. He just received money in which to pursue hitting.
It's like that cast. It's like Casanova was mm-hmm. like that. He's like convinced people to give him money to hit without any real. I don't know. I guess for Hans Christian Andersen, he had some,
right.
He had some track record of hitting, but it was with his voice. Then he lost his voice. Now he's mopping up cum in a whorehouse. You're going to give that guy a hit stipend?
I guess, dude.
But I guess it was looked at as like a fall from grace. Like, he used to hit for a little bit.
He could hit again.
Maybe he could hit again. And I mean, he did. So
right.
I guess they weren't wrong.
There's a theory, and I don't really know how much water it holds, but the theory is that Hans was actually the bastard son of the king, and that's why he did it. I don't know. This was mentioned once in one thing I was reading, and I don't know. His mom was a drunken laundry woman. I'm not sure the king – I mean, not that the king doesn't just sometimes pork whoever, but whatever. So he uses that money to go back to school, since he'd fucked off from it when he went to Copenhagen, but he's like 15 or 16 and all the kids in his class are like 11. And ironically, he was not a good writer at all. He could barely write his own language, and his teacher was a huge dick about the whole thing and constantly insisted that Hans was going to wind up in the nut house, just like his papaw. And Hans, that sort of fucked him up, and this was before we knew about psychological damage and shit. But apparently Hans had his most recurring nightmare, even in his success, was this teacher berating him. He would wake up in cold sweats thinking about that guy making fun of him in front of all the other students. And so he stays at that school for 4 years. He learned enough to move back to Copenhagen, enroll in university, and that's when he started composing poetry. So before he started writing children's book, he had actually found a decent amount of success as a novelist and a playwright. He also wrote 6 travel books, much like our travel book, Round Here and Over Yonder, which you can get wherever books are sold or at treycrowder.com, where you can find tickets to see Trey on the road. Round Here and Over Yonder. Also, until December 1st, that's when this episode comes out, it is 50% off on Audible. Round Here and Over Yonder. It's a good read. So he didn't publish his first volume of fairy tales until 1835, actually. So he's 32 or something. And by the way, a lot of them, he didn't even fucking write. They were just stories that he had heard when he was a kid, and he just wrote them down the way that he remembered him. The Emperor's New Clothes, which is one of his most famous works, actually an old Spanish story, but nobody had written it down, or at least he couldn't find that anyone had written it down. And also the publishing world and plagiarism and copyrights and stuff are way different back then. So he was just taking all this shit that he had heard and being and by the way, it's not that me and you in stand-up comedy haven't been guilty of overhearing something at a party and using it in a bit or whatever, but that's way fucking different in my opinion.
Well, I was actually thinking it. I almost said earlier, okay, first of all, before I forget this, I want to circle back. I missed somehow the context of, I realized when you said he got this, he was wiping up cum in a whorehouse, then he gets money from the king and he goes back to school. And you said he was like 15 or 16 at this point, something like that.
Yeah.
Or 14 or whatever. So what I missed the first time around, when he crashed that party and was singing and dancing and crying, what was he, 11?
14. Well, I think he was 14 because that's when he moved to Copenhagen. His stint in Copenhagen.
So all that happened pretty quickly then.
His stint in Copenhagen, because like he loses, you know, he goes to Copenhagen at 14. He crashes that party. And then he loses his voice 3 months in to his opera career or whatever. And then he moves back home. So yeah, like this dude had one of the most insane coming of ages in the history of the world. Like he went from, the top to the bottom and then to the real top with the fucking king.
14 is borderline, in my opinion. It's right on the boundary of like
coming of age,
making a huge difference in how you perceive the move of like
agree.
Because if some like 12-year-old cold faced street urchin busts into a noble's party and sings like an angel and then breaks down crying, it's like, okay, I get how that works. Like I was picturing a grown man, you know, like.
Well, 14 was a lot older back then.
Especially, but I know that's why I say 14 is borderline, because I feel like back then 14 was pretty much a fucking adult. So
also, he's hideous.
Yeah, right.
And I'll give you an example later. One of my favorite quotes from someone who is ostensibly his friend. It's worse than how you talk about me, bro.
The other thing I was going to say about him is when you said he just wrote these down is that like. I almost said earlier that he's a wild dude because all those stories, they feel like stories that have been passed down orally for like generations. They feel like ancient, like people have always told, like, you know, they're fucking fairy tales. Like you picture just being folk tales, like they just been around forever. And it's like how you invent those, like inventing those is like inventing fucking street jokes and stuff. But somebody does. Somebody has.
Yeah.
So I was like, you know, that's a wild thing. So then when you said it's like, oh, no, he didn't even invent a lot of them. He just like was the person who wrote them down. That made a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense while also being like, well, shit, because that's Uncle Remus stories. They're like that, right?
Yeah. The Brer Rabbit stuff. Yeah.
But as I recall, you still have to be talented. The dude that. The white man who compiled all those Uncle Remus stories, whose name I can't even remember, and that's part of my whole point
something.
Like, the fact that people don't really remember his name, they just remember the Uncle Remus part is like a credit to him, I feel like. Because I feel like that dude, I'm pretty sure never presented it as like, I came up with these stories, right?
Right.
It was always like, no, these are old Southern, you know, tales or whatnot. So anyway.
Well, and for the record, though, even if it's a story that you'd heard before, like you still have to be a talented writer to get the oral part down and it to make sense and to be charming. You know what I mean? Like you still have to have some talent. And by the way, I don't think that he did this with all of these things. And I'll explain later because there's evidence of him like using his life and personality into some of the characters and stuff. Also a thing that I really enjoyed learning. He wrote the way that he did. He used a lot of informal slang, and he also spelled things the way that he wanted them to be read, which is me and you do that, which we learned it from Mark Twain. Mark Twain learned it from Hans Christian Andersen.
Well, that is cool. So that's a fun
That fact. Is cool. That is cool, and that's like a bold thing to do when like the literary world is all about like being precise and like seeming intelligent. And he was like, it doesn't hit as hard though because this character don't talk right. So like this is how he would say it. But this is also another reason why apparently per like real Hans Christian Andersen fans that spoke his language, we've never truly experienced a Hans Christian Andersen story because his translations are considered very subpar. Like all the translations are like, you can't, because it's like, and I get it because it's like, imagine you can translate English into Spanish, but if you are speaking slang English and making up words, how do you translate that to Spanish? You know what I'm saying? Like, so I get it. Like our book, you know, which I think in Spanish is Red Redneck de Rojo. It's very popular there. The Liberal Redneck Manifesto did very well for Dirty Works editorial, but like I know that so much is missing. Like I would love to have a Mexican read it to me in English, how they translate it, you know? Anyways, as I was saying about, I think that he did write some of these, like he like very much like the Ugly Duckling, he identified with this so much because one of his friends described Hans Christian Andersen as a long, thin, fleshless, boneless man wriggling and bending. It gets worse. A long, thin, fleshless, boneless man wriggling and bending like a lizard with a lantern-jawed, cadaverous visage.
Lord God.
A friend.
Yeah. Nothing but an old dead-looking slop snake, you.
Look at you.
Yeah, that's rough.
A dead-looking slop snake. So he used a lot of dark imagery and fucked-up situations, even though these were children's book, because he wanted adults to like them, too. So in his brain, he was making, like, what we, you know, like Toy Story. You know what I mean? Like, these are for kids, but when the adult is reading them to the kid, I don't want them to think it's a chore. You know what I mean? I want them to, like, you know, the Princess Bride as well. These types of movies where it's like, look, these may even actually be for adults. It's just the kids will like it too. But he used these dark themes and imagery, like in the original, and these don't get translated into when we remake them. In the original Thumbelina, she was purchased as a seed from a witch and kidnapped by a large ugly toad in hopes of being married to said ugly toad's son. And Thumbelina is so horrified that she weeps loud enough to be heard by the minnows in the water who chew through her lily pad stem and set her free. Children's book. In the original Little Mermaid, Ariel doesn't magically have her voice taken away. She has her tongue cut out, and every step she takes with her new legs feels like she's being stabbed with a knife.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if they were way darker than that, even. Just back right. then, children's... Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, hell, fucking...
Grimm's.
Yeah, right, yeah. I was going to say, Aesop's Fables and Grimm's Fairy Tales and stuff, like the original versions... So fucked up.
Hold on. Is that where the word is that why we say that's so grim?
I don't know. I guess it's worth looking up. Because I mean, I know that the Grimm's a fairy tale.
G R I M M.
They got two M's. Yeah, right. Yeah. And the word doesn't.
While you're looking that up, he leveraged his fame into meeting a lot of famous people. But it seemed like every time he met famous people, all he wanted to do was talk about how hard he hit. And coincidentally, he desperately wanted to leverage his fame into specifically being homies with the Grimm brothers because they were out at the same time. And they were sort of like, you know, the gold standard of like children's books and shit. Did you look up that Grimm thing?
I did. They're not related. It's just a coincidence. It says both the English word Grimm and the German surname Grimm with two M's. They both derive from the Proto-Germanic word Grimas, which means fierce or furious, but they're not.
Grimace means furious? Of course it does. Yeah, you grim. I was literally thinking of the purple dude from McDonald's, not the word.
Sure. Well, Grimace, I said it's G-R-I-M-M-A-Z, Grimaz, Grimaz, Grimaz maybe. Grimace is like a that's a grimace, you know?
Right. I definitely mentioned this during the Charles Dickens episode, but it was a long time ago and bears repeating here. He was all like Hans Christian Andersen was infatuated with Charles Dickens. It's so wild that like all these people the time periods in which just all these fucking classics were just alive at the same time, you know what I mean? Anyways, he's infatuated with Charles Dickens, and he wanted to be buddies with him, and they met at a party or something. Dickens invited him to his house to hang out, and I'm sure that you'll remember this. But then, so he invites him to his house to hang out, and Hans Christian Andersen just decided to stay for 5 weeks. He just stayed at Dickens' house for 5 weeks. And Dickens was like, yeah, we're not friends anymore. Like, you can't just do that. And when he left, Charles Dickens put a plaque in the bedroom that Hans Christian Andersen stayed in that said, Hans Christian Andersen stayed here for 5 weeks, but to the family, it felt like ages. Like, that was just in the bedroom the whole time.
I'm starting to question Hans Christian Andersen's social skills.
I have theories.
And when you add that to the fact that he looked like a dead slop snake, it's like, you know, he couldn't have been much of a people person. I mean, right. Which is sad for him because he clearly wants to ingratiate himself to everyone who hits.
A testament to how good his writing is, though, you know. He was also big buddies with the Rothschilds. That's wild. He never owned a house, by the way. He literally just couch surfed with hitters, which is why he stays at places for 5 weeks. Also important to note that many of them stopped being friends with him, not just because he outstayed their welcome, but because he tried to fuck all their daughters. This is what they think. This is what they say. And a lot of it, I'm about to say a thing that's like, oh, maybe I don't know if that's true. He also had a relationship with this famous person of the day. She was a singer. Her name was Jenny Lind. But the rumors are coming from Jenny Lind, that Hans Christian Andersen never tried to have sex with her at all, which fits and supports the narrative that a lot of people spin, that he was a homosexual and he would do. But that was not appropriate to be back then. So a lot of people suggest. A lot of people suggest that his way with women or whatever was like he was overcompensating and he was just trying to put up this like, no, what do you mean I'm gay? I fucked your daughter. you know what I mean?
Yep. That totally makes sense to me.
And this is why a lot of people believe that The Little Mermaid may have been about him not feeling comfortable in his own body, with his own sexuality, and trying anything to be different, but ultimately you couldn't because you're a product of your environment, whatever. He published 156 fairy tales during his lifetime. He had a lot more that came out posthumously, so that figure ended up being north of 200. And he also wrote 14 whole letters a day. And one of his main criticisms from people, which this is hilarious, was that he overproduced. He did too much. That was their criticism. Not that it was bad, just that he did too much. You know what I mean? Which is kind of fucking crazy.
Well, you say not that it's bad, but I feel like an inherent part of that criticism is that, like,
has to be
right. Quantity over quality type thing. Yeah, right, exactly. I don't know what else you could mean by that other than, you know what I'm saying? Like, if they all smash legitimately, I don't think anyone would be like, yeah, but there's too much hits here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. So this is going to make you feel like a worthless sack of shit because it certainly made me feel that way. The Snow Queen, which is one of his most popular works. I believe Frozen is based on this. One of his most popular works. It was written, produced, edited, and published in 16 days. Out the door. Out the fucking door. 16 days. That's crazy.
You know how many pages the original story was?
I thought about that, like, well, you know, it might not have been that big of a story, but like, bro, even if it was just a short story, we still both know how hard that is, you know, like, because usually, like, your first draft never. That ain't ever it.
Well,
but like
it says on Wikipedia, it actually says that the Snow Queen is one of his longest and most highly acclaimed stories. So
wow, yeah. All right. In closing, he had a crippling fear of being mistaken as dead while he was asleep.
That happened to people back then.
It did. Like, it's not without precedent because people used to just get buried. I mean, that's where the bell tolls comes from. You know that we talked about that.
We've talked about the bells that
they put a string in there. He was afraid of that. He was also afraid of rabies, fire. I wrote rabies twice. I guess he was really afraid of it. He was also agoraphobic, which makes not a lot of sense to most people because he wrote so many travel books and he traveled a lot. But like, I don't know. I used to be like, that doesn't make any sense. But like, I actually kind of relate to that a little bit, because I travel a shit ton, and I'm not, let me say this to people who, I come to your city and I have a good time and I entertain. I don't hate seeing you. I don't hate being there, but like traveling really does me in, and I'm really someone who kind of doesn't like it, but I do it for a living. So like, you know, I kind of get it. On yeah. August 4th, 1875, he died of liver cancer. That is Hans Christian Andersen.
Nice.
Are you entertained?
Yeah. What do we got here?
Well, we have, Trey, we have some air mail. So here's one subject line. By the way, I have not, this is funny, I've not vetted any of these. Subject line, limericks. What's up, fancy motherfuckers? I reckon if I have to listen to y'all's podcast every week, you're going to have to listen to some limericks written by Smoky Mountain Hillbilly Trash. Seriously, love y'all's show more than corn liquor. Stay fancy. Here's the limerick. There once was some clever white trash who figured out how to make cash by talking about the riches and the trashy sons of bitches and how their cultures all intermash. Wonderful. Some
lovely.
That's lovely. Some folks are born noble by blood. Some folks ain't rich, but they hit pretty good. And then there's the classes of us old poor dumb asses born to cough and go die in the mud.
In the mud. Nice. My man.
Rich people own diamonds and pearls, and poor folks eat possums and squirrels. But it seems to be true that they both are imbued with a craving for trashy ass girls.
Nice.
That was, yeah, that's some good shit right there. Okay. I don't know. Subject line. Ben Franklin and International Swimming Hall of Fame. Trey, you're about to love this. Hey, Corey and Trey, it's Bubba from Fort Lauderdale, the soap nice. Guy.
The soap man.
Bubba yeah. the butt soap man. Yes, the one that had a couple drinks and wrote his website with a Sharpie on your stomach. Not one of my proudest moments, but hell. I recently saw Trey the last time he was down here. What you guys don't know is my real name is Todd, and guess what? I'm the Artifacts and Collections Coordinator for the International Swimming Hall of Fame. What? Imagine my surprise.
Bubba contains multitudes.
He sure does. Imagine my surprise a couple weeks ago driving to work and listening to Putting On Airs. Listen every week. Also well read. And here you guys talking about Ben Franklin and our Hall of Fame. I have included some photos, and if you're ever down our way, I will give you a tour before we go to that gay country bar that I've promised to take you to for a drink. Also, yep. I took a cake to Trey when I saw him, but I don't think he got it. But it was in reference to your and his conversation about sitting on a cake and eating dick, or sitting on a dick and eating cake. That's why I got him a cake. But... What, Trey?
I remember I did a show at a church in Fort Lauderdale, a gay church in Fort Lauderdale. And I remember him coming. I remember talking to him. And I don't remember a cake, but I don't know why he didn't have the cake when he came up and talked to me. Did they take it from him or something? I don't
maybe.
Know. He came up to the side of the stage. I remember seeing him, and I remember knowing it was him and everything, but I don't remember a cake. Anyway.
They may have confiscated it. There's his, that's a picture of their Ben Franklin wall at the swimming Hall of Fame. That's fucking crazy, in my opinion, that we know that guy. Wow. Thank you, Bubba. We got one here. Subject line, beat that, motherfuckers. Sup, fuckers? Name's Ricky.
Damn right it is.
Sup, fuckers? Name's Ricky. I wrote to you guys a while back to tell you to do an episode on the movie King Ralph, which you totally fucking still should, by the way. But today, I just wanted to issue a challenge for all the other listeners. Spotify just did their year wrap-up. I've attached mine. 22,331 minutes for the Well Read podcast and another 15,000 minutes for Putting On Airs. Not sure, since it won't show me the minutes listened for my number two podcast, but I did the math. And I listened to every POA episode twice, so it's close. So I'm officially challenging all the other listeners in the Skewniverse. Beat that, motherfuckers. Love you guys like chicken. Ricky fucking Bobby. Get the fuck out of here. If your name is Ricky Bobby.
By the way, I forgot to mention in my, it's always says, P.S. squirrels are soulless creatures that have zero capacity for love.
My
fuck
man.
Squirrels and fuck Corey.
Yes. I already said he smashed and you didn't get to the postscript yet. That was incredible. That warmed the cockles of my cold dead heart. That's what that
There's did. Also another postscript in the form of a separate message. By the way, I forgot to mention in my last message that I didn't start listening until May of this year. So
that's
I put those numbers up on Spotify in 6 months. So I'll say it once again. I formally challenge the entire Skewniverse. Beat that, motherfuckers, Ricky fucking Bobby.
Ricky has thrown his glove down.
Yeah, we can't do another mail after that. That's the closer right there, buddy. Yeah, Trey, tell everybody what to do to find you and all that
tonight,
shit.
When this show comes out, tonight and tomorrow night, I'll be in San Francisco at Cobb's, and then next weekend, Lowell, Arkansas, the week after that. Me, Corey, and Drew are all going to be together again at Zany's in Nashville for our annual Christmas shows, the 14th through the 16th. You can get tickets to all those and see my 2024 dates on TreyCrowder.com, as Corey already mentioned. Also, a link to our book around here and over yonder at TreyCrowder.com. And today, December 1st, is the last day you can get the audiobook for Around Here and Over Yonder for half off on Audible. So check all that out. Listen to our other podcast and make it hit. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and go to BonusCorey.com to see what I'm doing. I'm building a universe. It's called Chickalookie. It is my... it is my Lake Wobegon, if you will. It is my Tatooine, if you will. I'm writing fiction stories all contained in this universe. It's a lot of fun. You can become a citizen of Chickalookie by going to bonuscorey.com and joining all the fun. It's $5 a month. You can also do it for free. You just get stuff later. You know what I'm saying? But if you really want to support the show, it's a cup of coffee a month. bonuscorey.com. And stay fancy, mother of huggers.
Skew. Here's Lydia Lovelace.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Royalty and rednecks are alike. They both like cutting and picking fights. Biscuits and baked beans where they don't belong. Sit on down with Corey and Trey and learn some fancy shit today. We'll laugh a little even when they're wrong. They'll take you to a magical place where if you call someone a cunt, nobody cares. They keep it debonair at putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs, putting on airs.
NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. Woo!
As an adult, don't we all miss spring break? Nothing like taking a week off from all your responsibilities. Well, here's the next best thing for adults, a spring break from house payments. SaveWithConrad.com can help you get rid of all your credit card debt just like that. We're routinely helping our listeners save $500, $600, $700, even $800 a month. And you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this, but check this out, no house payments for 2 months at SaveWithConrad.com.